Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike.
Lauren.
Mike, this morning I offered you a ride in my car to the office so you wouldn't have to ride your bike. But you normally ride your bike. So what made you accept the offer?
To spend quality time with you, of course.
Oh, stop it. But aren't you supposed to be bike calore? I mean, you're a bike guy.
I have been known to be a bike person, yes.
And as much as I want to be a bike person, I'm not totally converted. And maybe I should be.
I think we will get you there over the next 35 to 45 minutes.
I should probably start with like an actual bike though, right?
Yes. We'll work on that too.
Let's talk about it. Hi, everyone. This is Gadget Lab. I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired.
And I am Michael Calori. I'm a senior editor at Wired.
AKA Bike Calori.
It me.
And Wired senior associate reviews editor Adrienne So is here, or at least she's here on Zoom. She joins us from Portland, Oregon. Hey, Adrienne. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, guys.
So we've talked a lot about bikes on this pod because we generally like them a lot. And many of us happen to live in areas where getting around on bikes is possible. But for some people, bikes are daunting, terrifying, expensive, or just not feasible where they live, or all of the above. So considering that May is National Bike Month, we thought we would do our annual Bike Calori episode. I really think that's probably what we're going to title it, if Boone will let us. All right, in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about e-bikes, which might be a better solution for some people, and I think people are curious about. But first, let's start with the basics. Should you be commuting by bike? What kind of bike should you look to buy? And what's all the other gear that you need? So, Adrienne, what would you say people really need to start rolling or riding?
So, Mike and I have bonded over this in the past, but my own personal road bike is just a complete beater. It's the Surly Cross Trek, and it's the color of newborn diarrhea. And I love it. I love it so much. Like, if you're just like piddling around your neighborhood, I say just go find an absolute banger in the color that you absolutely love. Let it be like steel, you know, get some thicker tires on it so you're not like fumbling around all the place. Couple of the good mid-range brands, I guess I'd say. Surly, Kona, Marin. I think that's local to you guys. So yeah, I would expect to spend somewhere around like $400 or $500. And like, I got my bike off of a Facebook buy-sell trade group. Mm-hmm. And your best bet is a bike in an absolutely revolting color. So that is my suggestion.
Adrienne, this begs the follow-up question. what color is newborn diarrhea? What is that? Is that brown? Is that chartreuse? Like, what is it? Puke?
I don't even know if Surly has an official name for it, but it's like this very specific shade of like browny green that is just, it's not olive, it's not cocoa, it's in between. And when I find another Surly guy who has a bike the same color, like, you're legally required to high five. So it's so revolting.
Mike, what's your go-to road bike?
Well, I mean, my own is, I have a couple, as Adrian mentioned. I do have a beater, which I use for quick errands, things like going to the grocery store, going to yoga class, going to the bar to meet a friend. And then I have a bike that is a little nicer with a little nicer appointments that I use to get to and from the office. Both of them I spent well under $1,000 for. I think the beater I spent like $250 on, and then my road bike, the nicer one, I spent, I think, $700 or $800 on. And really, like, I think the thing that you need in addition to a bike is you need a purpose, right? You need a place to go, a reason to ride. Because when you're first starting out, I think having a destination and having like a good practice of getting to and from that destination is really important. So I would recommend that you pick one errand that you normally do every week and choose to do that by bicycle instead of driving. So if you normally drive to your tennis game, you can ride your bike to your tennis game. Or if you normally drive to pick up the coffee beans for your weekly espresso machine coffee bean refill hopper thing, then you know, just ride to the roastery and get your beans by bicycle instead of driving. I feel like if you do that, that's just as important as having a good bike to ride, because otherwise that good bike that you bought will just sit in the garage.
Right. So ultimately what you're going to use it for is going to dictate what kind of bike you need. I'm going to lean really heavily on you both for advice here, because I'm not a big biker, as we've established. I bought a used bike back when I went to grad school because the campus was huge and I was glad I had it. I enjoyed riding it around. And I also briefly trained for a triathlon with that bike, although the triathlon didn't happen. That's a whole other story. But then recently, which is several years later at this point, my bike was stolen. So now I'm without bike. And I'm debating what to do. And it wasn't an expensive bike. It was a beater, as you would describe it. It was used. It was a Raleigh Ravinio something or other. Mike, you did some work on it a couple times.
I put air in the tires, Lauren. Oh.
It seemed very official. You had like a bike kit in the garage and you were like doing things. You were tinkering. Are you telling me you were only putting air in the tires?
Oh my God. I love getting out my bike tool. I'm like, I am exactly like Angelina Jolie and Gone in 60 Seconds or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to tighten up this bolt. I'm too fast, too furious right now. It's awesome.
But then recently a friend of mine came over my house and she had just done a very, very long bike ride. Like, she rode from down in Silicon Valley to where I am in San Francisco. And I noticed that her bike had, it was like a partial road bike, partial gravel bike.
Yeah. I think the thing that you're talking about is something that you can use on multiple different kinds of terrain. People usually just call that a hybrid.
Hybrid. Okay. Yeah. So at what point would you say that someone needs to consider a hybrid?
I mean, if that's your first bike, I think that's fine. If that's your second bike, that may be more appropriate. It really just depends on like where you live, what the riding conditions are like, what the infrastructure is like in the place that you ride. Like, if there are a lot of bike lanes and a lot of people out cycling all the time, then you probably don't need anything that is going to have to, like, you don't need to spend the money that you would need to do in order to outfit a bike to ride off-road or to ride on rough roads. However, if there is not a lot of infrastructure, or if your riding is mostly going to be like, you know, you want to go riding off-road, or you know that you're going to be riding on like fire roads, or, you know, on the path that's next to the road, which isn't always in the best condition, then that might be a reason that you would want to, you know, get a bike that is a hybrid, something that can handle more than just pavement.
As Mike mentioned, a lot of bike people tend to have like bike quivers, like bikes for different purposes, but figuring out those purposes is pretty key. And I think a hybrid is really good if you do not intend to become like a crazy bike person with like a dozen bikes in your garage. If you had the gravel bike or a hybrid bike, that's awesome. If you are combining like commuting and a weekend, a gentle weekend trail ride. But that's absolutely true, what Mike was saying about finding a purpose, because finding safe routes, like, it shouldn't be an issue, but it totally is. Before I go anywhere on my bike, you really have to plot it out so you don't find yourself in a place with no shoulder or like 18-wheelers or something. I wish that wasn't such a big issue in a lot of places, but it really is.
So how concerned are both of you about safety? I think that's my number one hang up about cycling around San Francisco.
I mean, I'm not in San Francisco. I'm in Portland. It has a reputation as being a really bike-friendly city. Our Bureau of Transportation publishes local bike maps with safe routes, but those tend to kind of highlight, you know, like commuter routes or someplace you might drive to with your kids to like bike along the river or something. I find that Google Maps and Apple Maps are actually a lot better to check against each other. I think Google Maps has a bicycling layer so that it plots out the route, not only the routes, but the, you know, the grade and
difficulty.
Yeah, grade and difficulty. And then Strava has heat maps, which are awesome if you live in a more populated area, because I realized that I happen to live next to a really popular bike route. So the best protection that you have are other bikers.
I would add that if you're concerned about safety and you live in a relatively big city, look for your local bike coalition or like your bike advocacy group, because they usually offer introductory street safety courses, which covers all the basics, you know, the do's and the don'ts and the basics of the laws of riding on a road, whether or not there's a bike lane or not. Like here in California, if there's no bike lane, you're allowed to ride in the normal lane of traffic. And when you do that, even though it's within the law, all of the cars are honking at you. People are yelling at you. People are throwing things. It makes you feel really unsafe. But you are riding within the letter of the law. So there is this weird disconnect between, you know, what is allowed and what is proper and what is safe. And what is safe is going to be determined by your own comfort level, you know, whether or not you have like nerves of steel, which in some cities you need in order to ride on the streets. But I think, you know, to Adrian's point, if you do a little bit of research and you find the good routes, you'll meet other people to ride with. That's always, you know, if you ride as a group, it's safer than riding on your own usually. But also your local bike organization or your local bike advocacy group can be a big asset.
Something that I really love that has started in Portland has been the advent of bike buses. So the schools have started helping kids and parents who want to bike to school bond together. And I've seen some really incredible pictures of like 15 or 20 kids just biking to school together. It looks like a total like New Orleans second line. I love it.
I have to say the vitriol aimed at cyclists is always shocks me. I don't understand why drivers get so mad at cyclists, because cyclists are literally helping to make the planet a more habitable place. It's fewer cars on the road.
That is a whole separate
it's a whole podcast.
Episode.
It's a whole episode. Let's put a pin in that. All right. I have a question about the gear you need to get started aside from the bike. Because you're not just buying the bike, right? You need locks or a helmet or lights. And then I also have a question about cargo. What do you buy if you're, I don't know, toting your kids around or lots of grocery bags or a surfboard?
I would say yes to a helmet, lights, a lock, a pump, and a very basic bike tool, which is just a tool that has all of the wrenches that you would typically need to fix just about any bike. It's like three or four hex wrenches and a couple of screwdrivers, the different heads of screwdrivers. You can also get like a patch kit, something like that, if you want to make your own repairs, or you can just ask somebody to make repairs for you. It's usually pretty easy to find either a bike shop or a neighbor who can do something like fix a flat tire or, you know, fix your chain. Lube is also important. You need to lubricate your machine in order to make it work properly.
This is a family-friendly podcast, Mike.
Yes, lube is very, very important. The thing that I think you don't need to worry about is like the fancy clothes. You don't necessarily
need a kit.
You don't need any of that stuff. You can just ride in the shoes that you wear every day, provided they're flats and not heels. You can ride in jeans. You can ride in shorts. You can ride in a t-shirt. Just ride. Like when you were a kid and you rode a bike, you didn't get dressed up in like spandex and clicky shoes, right? You didn't put on the $400 sunglasses. You just literally hopped on your bike and went. The closest you can get to that, I think, is ideal, especially if you're just starting out and you just want to get around.
Yeah. The idea is to have it be fun. That's why I started on my summer of jorts for sports. So this is going to be the summer where I jorted up.
And Adrian, what do you use for cargo?
Oh man, the thing I love about bikes and bike people is the endless willingness to customize literally everything. I have a rear rack. I've got the padded seats and like the steel safety bar cage around our rear rack. I recently installed double wide foot decks so I can start lashing more things to the bottom of our rack. But mine is what you would call a mid-tail or a long tail. It's got the butt sticks out more so that I can fit both my kids riding on the back behind me.
Or you can also clip bags to it if you want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Or 50-pound bags of cement or dog food or mulch. I've done that too.
I think if you want to get to and from the grocery store, just start with a really good backpack. Something that's comfortable to ride your bike with under load. So test a backpack, put a bunch of stuff in it, ride around the block a couple of times and it feels okay, it's going to be fine. You'll know when you need more.
When I was biking around San Francisco or Berkeley, I would just dangle the bags of groceries from my handlebars, which I really don't recommend if you have any other options, but it can be done.
Whenever I see someone biking to and from a market, like the farmer's market or grocery stores in the movies, first of all, they always have leafy green stuff sticking out of the tops of their bags. And I don't know anyone who in real life ever has leafy green stuff. Stop it. Mike is raising his hand. Stop it. This whole podcast episode is just an episode of Portlandia.
I bought chard at the grocery store yesterday and I didn't want to break it to get it into the backpack. So I just stuck it out of the top of the backpack and I had charred leaves behind my head.
Okay. So you actually are that person. But then, yes, it always seems like people are just have one single bag of groceries that is going to sustain the crowd.
Yeah.
And they're on this beautiful bike with a basket and hair is flowing and everything just looks idyllic.
Live simply so that others may simply live.
All right. On that note, let's wrap up this segment. That's good advice. We'll wrap up this segment and we're going to take a short break and come back with more on e-bikes. Okay, so we've sold you on road bikes, and I think I've been sold. Actually, I really want another bike. I just haven't been able to get one, which is once again, a whole other episode. But we should talk about e-bikes and e-bike shares, because for a lot of people, these are just going to be a better option because they're powered and they can give you a boost. But they're also heavier, and they tend to be more expensive. I mean, I think unless you're one of those serious cyclists who's getting a carbon fiber multi-$1,000 racing bike, mm-hmm. if you're comparing the kind of beater bike you guys are talking about with an e-bike is going to be more expensive.
Yes.
So, Adrian, what would you say is the threshold for someone to say, okay, a road bike might not work for me. I should consider an e-bike.
I ride an electric cargo bike to school, and the people who consistently talk to me about it and ask about it are other moms, because I'm 5'2", there's just no way that somebody my size could carry kids and back. The whole reason we got an electric bike in the first place was because I was towing my kids.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
To school in a bike trailer with all their stuff. I was biking so slowly that my husband was really convinced that I would get flattened in the road because I wouldn't be able to bike out of the road quickly enough with his offspring behind me. So I really think that electric bikes and electric motors are a total game changer if you're older or smaller and you just wouldn't have the ability to do what you wanted to do on a bike without one. So if you are smaller, please think about it.
And I would say, like, if you have a longer commute, right? Or if you live in the boonies, like, I'm pretty lucky in that I have about a 3-mile flat commute across San Francisco from my home to the office.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you accepted my car ride today to the office, right?
Yes, that's exactly why. So, you know, if I lived 6 miles or 7 miles from the office and that commute involved a hill or two or three, just like a lot of places in San Francisco do, then I would probably be riding an e-bike just because it helps me get to where I'm going without the level of exhaustion that would otherwise require, right? Mm-hmm.
And sweatiness.
And the sweatiness. You still do get a pretty decent workout riding an e-bike. It just assists you. It doesn't do the whole thing for you. It just assists you. So it makes the pedaling more productive is all it is. But you still have to pedal for most e-bikes anyway.
Can you ride e-bikes in bike lanes? Or do you ride them on the road alongside all of the 4-wheeled gas guzzlers?
You can ride them in bike lanes.
You do ride them in bike lanes. There are, I think, 3 classes of e-bikes that are sold in the United States right now, which is something that you should probably check on your local laws. I know that New York City, for example, does not consider electric bikes with a throttle to be bikes. I think those are motor vehicles. I think most populated places, you'll want a bike that has a speed cap of about 20 miles per hour. And I know that a lot of business bikes are being capped now at 12 miles per hour. So,
and those would be like delivery bikes? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Adrian, you have mentioned that most people are going to want to look to an affordable DTC bike. What does that mean? What's a DTC bike and how much can people expect to pay?
So the most affordable options are going to be from companies like Aventon or Radpower. This is a direct-to-consumer bike that you can buy directly off their website and have it.
Oh, so that's what DTC means, just direct-to-consumer.
Yeah.
Like Warby Parker glasses or a mattress that you get DTC.
Absolutely, except that you are not pedaling a mattress down the street at 25 miles per hour, which is why I would 100%, like, I know that it's so tempting when you look at the prices of all these DTC bikes, you're like, okay, like the specs are kind of similar, but I'm spending like $1,200 versus $2,000 or $2,500. That really sucks, but it's also like, we've tested so many e-bikes here. And it just has such a big problem with direct-to-consumer companies. Like Radpower is really good at it, but they often don't ship the forks properly. The forks come bent, the displays are cracked. And if you've never assembled a bike before, it could be really dangerous. I mean, there's a lot of things about assembling an electric bike that could go wrong, which is why I generally recommend that if it's your first bike and you go to a bike shop and get to try out a bunch of different models and have somebody that you can talk to and somebody who will assemble it for you, because the time to find out that something is wrong with your electric bike is not when you've got like your kids and your bags on it and you're going like 25 miles an hour down the road. You don't want anything to set fire there. So.
Also, the folks at your local bike shop will probably be pretty well-versed on the local regulations, what's allowed, what isn't, and also what sort of bike would be good for your weight and the types of things you're going to be doing. Like Adrian was saying, if you carry your 2 kids to and from school every day on your bike, you're going to need a different style of e-bike than the person who just wants to get themselves and a 20-pound backpack to and from the office. So I would recommend talking to them. If you don't have a local bike shop or if you are uncomfortable going in and talking to somebody who's trying to sell you something, just ask the bike person in your life. I'm sure you have one. Even if they're in another city, you can ask that person.
Ask your own personal bike calorie.
That's right.
So what is battery life like on these e-bikes, both for each individual ride and over the long term, since we know that rechargeable lithium-ion batteries tend to lose their juice over several years?
That's another thing that you want to consider when buying like a cheaper bike with, say, like a Bafang system versus like a more expensive, more reliable motor and drivetrain. Like I personally have a Bosch motor drivetrain. More expensive electric bikes have drivetrains by companies like Bosch and Shimano, both of whom I recommend. I think Bosch's standards, they use like automotive standards when testing their drivetrains. My colleague, Julian Chikatu, and I, he tests more of the lower end bikes. And we recently had an unpleasant moment when he realized that his bikes have a range of about 12 to 20 miles per charge. And he had to charge his bike every day versus my personal bike, which has a range of 90 to 120 miles. And I only have to charge my bike once a week, which can also extend the life of the battery.
So. E-bikes will always come with a range statement. Like the manufacturer will tell you, oh, this goes, you know, 30 to 40 miles per charge. But you can dial in how much work you want the motor to do. You can ride with like almost no assistance or no assistance at all. Or you can ride with the setting that has the motor working really hard to make you go as fast and as efficiently from one place to another as possible. If you ride in that high setting, you're going to drain your battery that much faster, right? If you're riding a low setting, you can conserve your battery. So the range statements are really like, they're really guessy. You'll get a good sense of what your range is after you've done your normal rides in your normal style with the settings that you like a few times. You'll get an idea for what it actually is. But if you're worried about range, look for a bike where you can buy a second battery. So you can always have a backup battery charged at home or at the office, something that you know, like if you run into trouble, you're in a location where you can swap the battery. That's something that eases range anxiety.
Yeah, fair enough. Are e-bikes safer than road bikes? So even if someone isn't ready to invest in their own personal electric bike at this point, should they be looking to rideshare bikes or something like that? Instead of using a road bike when possible.
Rideshare bikes are a great way into e-bikes because a lot of them are electric now. So you can make a decision about how you feel about riding an e-bike. As to whether or not they're safer, that's completely up to the person riding it and the road conditions and the attitudes of the drivers in the location where they're riding it. Like it's just, it's a huge question mark because there are so many variables involved. I will say that e-bikes make it easier for you to get out of tough situations more quickly, right? So if you're in an uncomfortable situation where you're surrounded by things that feel dangerous, an e-bike will help you zip out of there faster than you would be able to if you were under your own power. However, I think that people driving cars generally have an idea in their head about how fast a bicycle should be able to go. E-bikes kind of break that expectation because they allow you to go much faster. So somebody may look in the rearview mirror, see you 30 feet behind them on a bike and say, oh, I'm going to change lanes now because there's no way that bike is going to be here by the time I'm changing lanes. And then do that to find you right next to them because you're on an e-bike and you're going 20 miles an hour. So there's an argument to be made that they're less safe because they can go faster, but there's an argument to be made that they are more safe because they can get you out of sticky situations. So really, it's just like if you keep your head about you, you don't take chances, every bike is safe, no matter what kind of bike.
I just wanted to stick this in here as long as we're talking about bike shares and stuff. Like you can try electric bikes from the shop. You can try electric bikes from like a bike share, but you can also try regular bikes from a shop. You can, I'm shopping for a new mountain bike because you can never have enough mountain bikes and you can never have enough bikes, period.
Yeah,
and,
you can.
I think the appropriate bike to person ratio in our house is maybe like 12 to 1. So that's what we're aiming for.
Our spouses and loved ones are screaming into their ear pods at this.
But like, anyway, we're rolling past that. We're rolling forward on our bikes. Any shop, like the bike shop is peopled by bike people who would be totally happy to let you try as many different kinds of bikes as you want. So that's another point. If you are still like not sure what kind of bike you want, you can also try regular bikes.
Adrian, thank you for that. I appreciate your 12 to 1 ratio there. I think I could make the same argument for surfboards, right? Yeah, why not?
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. Let's take a break and then we're going to come back with our recommendations. Adrian, as our guest of honor, what is your recommendation?
So my recommendation is I just finished reading Rebecca Solnit's A Paradise Built in Hell. And if anybody just needs a boost in their faith in humanity right now, which I think we might all do. It's basically like examining how in the worst of times, people just really step up and come together. And it's surprisingly really great. It's like heartwarming about how we all think that, you know, when disaster hits, like the 1906 San Francisco earthquake or the Mexico City earthquake, like you would think that it would be like chaos and just, you know, survival of the fittest or whatever. But it turns out that that's a narrative that's imposed on us by like anywhere from like disaster movies or FEMA, and that the people on the ground actually really help each other. And there's just, it's so tear jerky, like all the people who helped each other out of the towers at 9/11 and stuff. Like if you really...
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Need to be able to look around and think that everybody around you is really a good person at heart. I recommend it.
I picked that up during the pandemic and did not finish it. I admit it's on my list, my Goodreads list with my one friend, Michael Laurie. but it is on my list of books to finish. And I was also really bolstered reading about how the community here really banded together and tried to support one another and after this terrible, terrible crisis. And it does sound like it's a book that's a good tonic for today's day and age. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that excellent recommendation. Mike, what's your recommendation this week?
I brought a bike-related recommendation this week.
Of course you did.
Yes. It is my favorite cycling bag. It is called the Road Runner Bags Lil Guy. That's LILGUY. It is a hip pack, or as we in the United States say, a fanny pack.
It's worth noting here that Mike and I both own this bag and totally love it. This is actually my everyday bike bag too.
Oh, it's so great. Okay, so it doesn't hold a lot. It won't hold your laptop. It will barely hold your lunch, but it is a hip bag. You can also wear it as a sling. It's adjustable, so it fits any sized person, and it holds basically like the essentials that you need for a long ride. So it'll hold your sunglasses, your sunscreen, a little towel, maybe like a can of soda or like a can of beer, your locks. There are a couple of places to attach locks to the outside of the bag on the belt or on the back. It'll also hold your lights. It'll hold your bike tool, and it'll hold your phone. So just about everything that you need to get out of the house for 6-7 hours and then come home and shower and eat. It is $75, which is a lot of money for a bag. However, I will say that it is remarkably well constructed in the United States by people who live in Los Angeles who make a living wage. And the materials are very high quality and the company itself is delightful. The zippers last forever. Everything is guaranteed. So it's money well spent, even though it is quite a bit of money for a sling bag. I use it when I walk around the neighborhood. I like it so much. It's not just a bike bag for me, but it is the thing that is always on me whenever I'm going for a bike ride.
The construction of it is also really ingenious. Like, I don't know if it was clear that like the bike lock, it's a loop in the back so you can just like slide your U-lock in there. And then there's like webbing on the front so you can just clip your lights on there. Like you don't have to, it's ingeniously made. It's one of the reasons I like it.
Yeah. The thing that I appreciate the most about the lock storage is that you don't need to unlock your lock to get it off the bag. You can just pull it out of that loop, but it stays in that loop because you cinch it down with the same strap that keeps it cinched to your body. So yeah, it's pretty ingenious. Anyway, that's my recommendation. The Lil Guy from Roadrunner Bags.
I'm looking at the Lil Guy fanny pack right now on the roadrunnerbags.us website. And it does look very well made. And also there are a handful of colors here you can choose from, including olive cordura, which I'm wondering, Adrian, would you say that this is the color of newborn diarrhea? It looks a little green.
It looks a little too tasteful. This is a little too attractive, too, I think. Okay. You want it to be really gross.
Yeah, you want it to be putrid. Okay.
Yeah, you want to feel a little bit sick when you look at it.
Okay.
Oh, boy. Enough about vomit-colored bags. Lauren, what is your recommendation?
My recommendation this week, I may embarrass Adrian just a little bit, but Adrian wrote this gorgeous essay on Wired.com this week titled "A Letter to My Fellow Asian Mothers from the Multiverse." And before this show started, I think we were all sort of fangirling over Everything Everywhere All at Once, the new movie out that's starring Michelle Yeoh. And in fact, Kara Swisher, when she was on the podcast a few weeks ago, that was her recommendation that we go see that movie. And I took her advice and I went and saw it. I cried through like this whole entire second half of the movie. I was on a date and I just sat there sobbing and had to explain afterwards that often I cry during movies, but this one was particularly touching. And Adrian did this fantastic essay on Wired.com, not only about that film, but also Turning Red. And there was one other film that you referenced in your essay too, Adrian, right?
Yeah, it's Uma. Yes, a movie. Uma. Yeah.
And Adrian, I just want to say, I want to give you all the kudos because it really was such a powerful essay. You're such a great reviewer and I love reading your reviews, but I also love when you do non-review stories and share personal experiences. And you wrote about your own relationship with your mother and just the experience of being the daughter of an immigrant mother. And it's just great. And I recommend that everyone go read it.
Oh, Lauren, I'm blushing. Thank you.
And if I may read one of the passages from it that I thought was really powerful. And once again, I'm just totally embarrassing Adrian here. But she writes, "To be an immigrant woman means to hold many versions of yourself in your head at once. Not only is there the yawning difference between how we perceive ourselves and how we are perceived by others." And then in parentheses, "Honestly, sometimes I don't know about you people." but there's noted and I laughed.
No one in this room. But, no one on this Zoom.
No, I mean, really, it's lessons we all need to learn. And then you continue. "But there's also the gap between what our lives would have looked like if we'd stayed there instead of coming here." And then at the end, the kicker about raising your own daughter was really, it really got me in the gut. So thank you for writing it, Adrian.
Thank you, Lauren. I'm going to lighten the mood here deliberately because I'm so moved right now. But I had a story when I saw Everything Everywhere All at Once. I went out with a bunch of fellow moms and we went out to the bar before we saw it. And I had to pee so bad about like an hour before the movie ended. And I was like, this is really distracting me. What should I do? And I just like vaulted over the back of my seat. I sprinted out of the theater. I've never peed so fast in my life. My friends were like completely appalled by my behavior during this movie. And I just like, and then I like vaulted back into my seat and my friend just leaned over and she's like, "He said to be kind. Did you get that?" And I was like, "Damn it." So, yes, I may see it in the theater again because I almost completely botched it the first time. My advice, my recommendation here is to not go to the bar before you go see the movie.
Wow.
All right, that's our show. Adrian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have feedback, you can find all of us on Twitter. Just check the show notes. This show is produced by Boone Ashworth, our very own Charlie Chip Black. We're taking a short break next week for the Memorial Day holiday, but we will be back with more Gadget Lab the first week of June. So tune in then.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machines.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Click here every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
from PRX.